Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Off the Wall podcast here on Blog Talk Radio, and then living the rest of the day, of course, on YesNetwork.com. April 15th, the year of our Lord, 2013, tax day. Hopefully everyone got their information into Uncle Sam on time. And may you be bestowed with a very large sum of money for your tax return. This day, also a very special day in the world of baseball. And I begin by telling you this. I hate rain, especially during baseball season. Unfortunately, we begin America's pastime in the month that is known for its showers, bringing May flowers. Rain, though, can sometimes be worthwhile. Afterwards, you may be lucky enough to catch a rainbow, or maybe even a double rainbow. And if you haven't seen that dude on YouTube, do yourselves a favor. Go to the search bar in YouTube and type in double rainbow. You will not be disappointed. Mr. Roy G. Biv comes to life. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet, all coming together as one. A harmonious semicircle that forms as a frown, but brings smiles to everyone who catches a glimpse of them. You almost want to bathe in those colors. You want to slide down each side of that rainbow and hope that you have some luck and fall into that fabled pot of gold at the end of each side. Maybe not you. Well, at least I do. All those vibrant colors that you see coming together from one end of the sky to the other. And it forms something that appears to be tangible, but it isn't. 66 years ago today, there was a rainbow of a man, a baseball player, that through hard work, dedication, adversity with a capital A, the size of the Freedom Tower, and through death threats, judged by the color of his skin. He helped baseball, the nation, and the world grow and start to get things right. What was he able to do in the face of utter hatred and disdain, even in his own clubhouse at the outset with the Dodgers, by the way? What was he able to do to help bring all the different colors together? And it was the most tangible and awe-inspiring occurrence in the history of the sport, in my opinion. Step back and think about it for a second. Just 66 years ago, for most of us, that is our parents' lifetime on this earth. When my parents were both born in 1946, African Americans weren't allowed to play baseball? Really? Were we that ass backwards? An African American could fight in World War II and defend his country? But he couldn't pick up a baseball bat? The sad answer to that question is the same as the network I work for. A capital yes. Speaking of the network I work for, the HD television watching the game at home is just as good as being at the game culture we live in today. All those vibrant colors of the rainbow you see before you on your magnificent 60 to 80 inch screens in your TV rooms, those of you lucky to have those gigantic televisions. Is there anything better to think that number 42 broke the color barrier in 1947 on this day, April 15th. Black and white TV culture would emerge after that. And wouldn't you know it, the year before his team wins the World Series in 1955, people would be introduced to color televisions for the first time. As Mel Allen used to say, how about that? Happy Jackie Robinson Day, everyone. Enjoy the baseball today. Just 9 games. Unfortunately, the 66th anniversary falls on a Monday, where it's typical for a lot of teams to have an off day. Still a bad job by baseball. They can't have just 9 games today. They can't. The pageantry, everything that goes along with today, everybody wearing the number 42, it gets lost. You need to have more going on the anniversary of what that guy did, not just for baseball. And I'm not going off the deep end here when I say this. For mankind. You may sit there and laugh at me right now, but it's the truth. You got to think about what he did. You got to drink it in. You know, when you're a kid, you really don't get it. You really don't understand. When you get older, when you get near 40, when you speak to people who know what it was like back then, especially in the South, where they grew up and they had separate drinking fountains, they had separate bathrooms, they couldn't go into certain establishments and eat. We're talking about almost 1950 here. And like I said, African American, they were fighting in World War II. You can go pick up a gun and go get Adolf, but you can't go pick up a bat, face Warren Spahn? Really? Just unbelievable. Unbelievable that we live like that. I have to tell you a story. We're trying to get Ralph Branca, his former teammate, to do a story for when the Yankees play the Dodgers. And I talked to Mr. Branca on the phone. I was privileged to talk to Mr. Branca on the phone last week. And in our conversation, it came up that my dad actually spoke to Jackie Robinson. He was 12 years old, so it's towards the middle 50s. And my grandfather used to take my father to Connie Mack Stadium in Philadelphia. It was like 50 cents. You sit wherever you want. You go in, whatever. My dad was 10. Jackie was 37. It was 1956. It was his last year. That particular day, Jackie was playing third base. My dad was lucky enough to be sitting third base side, right by third base, right on the rail. In between innings, Jackie Robinson, who dealt with all the hatred, all the animosity, all the racism because of the color of his skin, goes up and talks to a 10-year-old white kid in between innings about the game they both love. You want to talk about speaking volumes. The volume on that goes to 11. The measure of the man that could put, you know, he could have resented everything white. Could have. Wasn't him. He made my father's day, week, month, year. And it was a different time back then. Mr. Branca told me, you know, as players, we appreciated the fans. We knew they paid for our houses. They paid for our cars. They were the reason why we were out there on that field. It was just a different time. And talking to him, I mean, it sends chills up your spine. To talk to an 87-year-old Ralph Branca, and you're talking about Jackie Robinson. And he was funny, too, because he says, you know, because I wanted to get him on. And he says, well, how long is the interview going to be? Well, I said, Mr. Branca, it could be like 5 to 10 questions, maybe lasting 15 to 20 minutes. He goes, do you know how long I talk? And I could listen to that guy just like I could listen to Vin Scully forever. It's like listening to your grandfather. I have a caller, so I'm going to take the caller. I think I know who it is. 201 area code. Go ahead.
Chris, that's an amazing story you just told about your dad and Jackie Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Riley.
That is so cool. You know what I mean?
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. This is my friend Chris Riley, by the way. Big hockey guy and very, very happy that someone gave me a call so we could chat. So what's going on there, buddy boy?
Oh, I'm just, you know, today's a pretty amazing day. I'm dying to see this movie, just to touch on the Jackie Robinson thing, because I was listening this morning on one of the shows. They were talking about how the actor, his name escapes me at this time, who portrays Jackie Robinson, got the bat swing down, the running of the bases, all of his mannerisms. And at times, they said, in watching the baseball scenes, and you know from experience, you know, sports movies are never 100%. They don't look accurate, but they've gotten much better. He said,
and
it was
Ray
amazing.
Liotta was righty in Field of Dreams, and he was supposed
to
be lefty.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
this is
unreal. They said, you look at this, and for a period piece, this is like 61. They said they really got this down. I mean, they said it's amazing. The technical aspects of the baseball part of the movie, they said, are phenomenal. Phenomenal. Will blow you away.
Well, I'm just glad Harrison Ford put down the old card that he always plays now in movies where it's, give me back my family. You know, so he actually gets to be an honorary Branch Rickey. And I'm kind of excited. I'm kind of excited to see how he handles that character as well. So I'm excited to see the damn movie. I mean, it's that story about my dad. It's that old-time baseball, Chris, that, you know, you just wish you were around for when the players appreciated the fans a little bit more. And, you know, there's Twitter now, and people could follow players and tweet at them. And, I'll give anything for a retweet. And the players retweet them, and it probably makes their lives. But what's intimate about that? There's no intimacy. There's no, you know, there isn't like – like my dad had that moment with the guy who broke the color barrier in baseball. He comes up to my dad, a 10-year-old white kid, and starts talking to him. And I should make it about color, but I'm only making it about color because Jackie had to go through so much in his career with that. And I mentioned in my monologue there, it was even in his own clubhouse. And to know what he did and to know what he had to endure and get through that and do what he did for players who are still out there today. I mean, Robinson Cano, he would wear 42 if he was allowed, but Mariano wears it, obviously, and he's the last one that could wear it in all of baseball as it was retired in perpetuity. The guy's named after Jackie Robinson. So, and if you talk to a guy like David Price, and he tweeted out this morning that he wants to pitch on one of these anniversaries, it means so much. And it should to these African-American players and these players from other countries that are now involved in baseball. I mean, it's just we were just so ass backwards. And it was just, as I said, I don't know if you got the beginning of it, but 66 years ago, you know, it's our parents' lifetime for some of us. And it just, you got to scratch your head. It just doesn't make any sense.
You know what's remarkable about the story when you think about it? You know how over time, you know, history kind of just fades and memories go away? It's nice to see a lot of these ball players today realize that if it wasn't for one person who had the courage, the bravery to stand up and say, you know, look, I'm going to face tremendous adversity, but I know that 20 years out, 30 years out, 40 years out, guys are going to not have it as difficult as I will have it. And on top of that, you know, they'll probably remember me somewhat, but I think guys today realize he paved the way for so many people to make a living playing, you know, sports. Yeah, you think about he transcended something at a time when it was like, oh, my God. I mean, you know, I've heard stories of other baseball players, like Elson Howard talked about one time that they were playing spring training down in Florida, and they wouldn't let him into some restaurant, and Mickey Mantle said, well, guess what? The New York Yankees will never eat here again.
Yeah.
And they all got back on the bus and drove off. And, you know, those things will show you that, you know, it's more than the color of your skin. It's more about your teammate. It doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter to me what color you are. As long as you're my teammate and you're going to stick up for me and I can stick up for you, that's all that matters. And we have one common goal, and that's to be the best and to win. And I think that's what he was about. He wanted to be the best. He knew he had to know going in it was not going to be easy. And you knew there were guys on that clubhouse who probably, you know, wouldn't even look at him, acknowledge his presence. And, you know, you say to yourself, my God, what do you have to go through? The hardships, everything else. I mean, you look at other sports, too. Like, you look at Bill Russell. You look at all those guys, what they went through. And, you know, it's nice to see it doesn't get lost on a lot of people. You know, a lot of the guys who play know the history of the game. And I don't think a lot of the younger generation of kids who are not professional athletes or who are not really good athletes don't understand what some of these people had to go through so they could have the lives they have today. And it's a shame because, like, you know, some of these players know what they went through. Like Robinson Cano knows how hard it was and knows what he faced. But you ask the average kid on the street, they're going to be like, eh, you know, whatever. You know,
exactly. Yeah, and this is my friend Chris Riley, who decided to give me a call. It's the guest call-in is 646-716-4961 if you want to get on board here, 646-716-4961. But since I have...
Is it a party line, Chris?
Absolutely. But since I have Riles on...
Can other people join in while we're on the phone talking? Can we have like a four-way, five-way?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I'm pretty sure. I really haven't gotten more than...
Get him on?
I haven't gotten... Yeah.
He's a big Brooklyn Dodgers fan.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He grew up. He used to go to Ebbets Field all the time.
You are actually the first caller into the Off the Wall podcast, so congratulations.
Do I get a prize?
Not quite the Jackie Robinson of the Off the Wall podcast, but you are the first caller of the Off the Wall podcast. But, you know, just to finish up with Jackie here, I just wanted to make one more point, and I'll get your thoughts on it, too. But, you know, think about it. Before Martin Luther King, it was Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, that is true.
That's pretty heavy stuff right there.
You know, it's interesting too when you look at, you know, what he did and how he changed the game on so many levels that you'll never know. You know what I mean? There's probably so many stories out there you'll never hear that guys probably never wanted to talk about, but so they saw things that probably disgusted them and just couldn't bring it public. You know what I mean? And I think today it'd be a different, you know, there's a different place, different time. Guys can talk about stuff. And you are right about, you know, the whole Twitter thing and not having that connection like your dad had. You know, like I remember guys telling me, you know, their fathers and their grandfathers that, you know, the Dodgers lived in Brooklyn. They were their neighbors. They took the train to the stadium. They drove their car there. They walked there. Or you know what I mean?
They worked in clothing stores in the off season.
Yeah, they lived in Brooklyn. They became part of the fabric of Brooklyn. That doesn't happen today, you know. And that's a shame because you know, like you know, one of my friends said that you know, Jeter has done a couple of in the off season a couple of baseball camps to come to for, like, you know, elite training and stuff. And he said, you should see the eyes on the kids when he walks out onto the field and works with kids on how to field a grounder. You know, that's rare today. You know, you don't see that today. That's a shame that, like, these guys should understand that, you know, in the off season, you should take some time and go visit these guys. I mean, you know, you hear the stories of these guys from the days past when they'd be in a city somewhere and they go to the children's ward of a hospital unannounced and just walk in, you know, and just go see kids. That's lost today, you know. And but you look at, like, you know, there's a guy who Jackie Robinson probably didn't have to go over and talk to your dad, but felt he should reach out to that community to become part of that fabric.
Absolutely, and it's just sad that it doesn't happen anymore. It really is, and there's like a disconnect. And I don't call Twitter a connection. It's a disconnection. Everybody, if you look at kids nowadays, they're all on their cell phones. And I know I sound like, you know, the old guy going off here.
My daughters are like that.
If you look at kids, my daughters aren't there yet, but if you look at kids, they're on their cell phones and they're texting and they're chatting and they're Facebooking and they're Twittering. And then you ask them a question, and it's like they can't socially interact with you because they're so used to interacting through their smartphone or tablet or whatever the hell they have. You know, this is the culture we're in right now. I'll follow you on Twitter. Oh, okay. Don't call me. And no one talks on the phone anymore. Everybody texts. And I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but what happened to picking up the phone and calling somebody and talking to them? You sit there on text, and Frank DeGrace, our Nets producer, has a great rule. He says, if it's too much to text, I refuse to text you back. If you have to get into a conversation with me, call me. I did it once.
I was sending him
all these questions, and the phone rings, and he goes, listen, there's a rule. If you have more than three questions, you must call me. I am not going to text you all these answers back. And it was so great, you know, because I'm guilty. I do it sometimes, but it's just the culture we live in. But listen, while we have you on the phone, and thank you for calling, and anyone could call, by the way, if you're out there listening, 646-716-4961. That is Ron Guidry and the amount of home runs that Roger Maris hit in 1961. So it's very easy to remember the last four digits, 4961. 646-716-4961. But Chris Riley, my buddy, big hockey guy, you know, and just to give you a quick anecdote, to tell you how big of a hockey guy he is, he's sitting at a Devil game. Jimmy Doubt is about to take a face-off, looks up into the crowd, sees Riley, and looks up directly at him right before the puck is dropped and puts his thumb and pinky to his ear and his mouth and says, call me. See, this is what I'm talking about. True story.
That was at the Montreal Canadiens. I'm sitting in the corner, and all of a sudden he notices me. I didn't tell him I was going to the game. He just looks at me and goes, call me. And like the guy sitting in front of me goes, who are you? I'm like, that's a friend of his. That's all.
Who are you? But anyway, it is Chris Riley. He is excellent when it comes to hockey, so I want to pick your brain a little bit since you're on the phone and no one else is calling as I get into my sad voice. But anyway, it's good to have you on, so let's talk. Are you surprised, I mean shocked, by the New York Islanders this year?
Somewhat, because, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks ago, they were making plans to go to the golf course, you know, at the end of the season. You know, and I remember Jack Capuano, their coach, saying, you know, we keep making the same mistakes, and it's hurting us.
Well,
we have to get over that.
What's been the catalyst? What's been the key to their turnaround? Has it been Tavares? Has it been him, or
It's definitely been John. It's been the back off. It's been Matt Martin. It's been you know, Streit stepping up at the right time. It's been McDonald. You know, Josh Bailey is playing, you know, really well. He's going to the net. They're making the small plays that 5 weeks ago they couldn't make, and they're out-hustling and out-working people. That's all they're doing. They're not really flashy, but they're out-working and they're out-hustling, you know, people to the loose pucks. They're going where the puck is going to wind up. They're making the smart play at the right time. They're not getting themselves caught out of position as much. I mean, just look at that Ranger game the other night on Saturday night, and that was
that was a tremendous game. That was the best 0-0 game that I've seen in quite some time.
I mean, they really showed their mettle. They, you know, they were not intimidated by the Rangers at all. I think they frustrated the Rangers tremendously, but I think at the same time, they made a lot of the key plays, you know, that they had to make in that game. And you know, Oposo just needs to learn to close a little bit more and be a finisher, and he's a legit 30-goal scorer for them. He could wind up there. He's just got to learn to finish a little bit more. He's big. He's strong on his skates. He's tough to knock down, and that's my only thing I think that needs to pick it up. He knows it. I mean, he's not a stupid guy. He knows what he needs to do, but it's going to start to happen for him. I look for them to be a surprise in the playoffs. I really do. I think they could be a big surprise to a lot of people, and if you're caught napping against them, they could take you out in the first round. I mean, there are people who disagree with me, but I think they could surprise people.
Well, that leads me to my next question. Say the Islanders fall back to the 8th seed. Now, everybody, I've heard Pierre Maguire, I've heard Barry Melrose, a lot of these experts, and I trust all these guys. I mean, I love these hockey guys, and I trust you even more because I you know, we're friends, and everything you've said to me so far has been true. So you have validity with me when it comes to the guys on the ice. But is the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference, even if it's the Islanders, are they the sacrificial lamb to the Penguins who brought in Amaro, who brought in Iginla, who are going to get Crosby back? I mean, this team is
just stacked from top to bottom. Remember this. The Islanders give the Penguins fits. They always play the Penguins tough. And, you know, they could surprise some people. You know, they could... You know, I've known Sid a long time, and I've watched him play a long time. You know, he comes back from injuries probably better than most people I know. The only concern I have is he going to play at his full octane speed? You know, mm-hmm. psychologically, he took a puck to the face. That hurts. I don't care who you are. That's going to mm-hmm. hurt. But is he going to be able to go back to the front of the net to play to get this done? And you know, Iginla hasn't really, you know, picked it up out there because I think he was thinking, oh, I'll be playing with Malkin and Crosby. And, you know, Sid's been out. And I think that, you know, Morrow is a great leader. I mean, think about this. In the trade deadline, the Pittsburgh Penguins picked up two captains from two other teams.
Right.
You know, and that's something for leadership in that dressing room. The question is, can they turn it on, you know, with Bocoon and with Fleury in net? Can they turn it on at the right time?
Let me ask you this, Chris. When Crosby comes back, do you think it'll take a period of a couple games for Iginla to adjust to him, or do you think they'll hit the ice, you know, skating, you know, and just know where each other's going to be, or does that take time?
That it's hard to say, you know, because they could come out and look like world beaters. You know what I mean? Like everything could just click. You know, Dan Bylsma could really put something together where, boom, they explode and they just come out and they look like world beaters. There are adjustments, you know, in everything in life, there are adjustments you have to be aware of. And I think that, you know, it may take two, it may take three games for them to really gel. I mean, you look at the Rangers, it took a couple of trades to get them to gel in the right way. And, you know, you look at the Penguins and they're deep all over. There's not, when you look at them on paper, you say, my God, anyone could, you know, who's going to beat this team? But, you know, just look back at the Los Angeles Kings last year. You know, that to me is just an amazing story. When you look back last year, nobody thought the Kings were going to run roughshod over the Vancouver Canucks. Nobody.
Pierre thought that the Blues had a chance to duplicate that this year if they get locked into that 8 in the West. Do you agree with that?
They could. Yeah, I agree with Pierre on that. They're playing really well. They're solid all over the place. I mean, they gave fits to the Blackhawks. They gave fits to them, and they beat on them.
That would be something if the Blues were able to unseat them in that number one seed. Now, we only have 30 seconds of the live broadcast left, but I can keep going, and the rest of this will be on YesNetwork.com later this afternoon. So I want to keep talking to you about hockey. I don't want to end this in 30 seconds. I could keep recording here. I don't need to really get into that with people. But for those of you who are listening live, this will end in about 15 seconds, but you can catch the rest of it if you want to listen to some hockey chat with me and Chris Riley, my buddy boy, who also works for the NHL Network and all across the board, but should have a steady job somewhere within the NHL. That's just my personal opinion. As we go off the air here live, and we are recording the remainder of this, and it'll be up on YesNetwork.com, as I said, later this afternoon. But before I let you go, and I needed to get this in there because I wanted to get your thoughts on my New York Rangers, because, you know, it just seems like it's certain. We talked earlier in the season when they were going to play the Devils at the Pru, and, you know, the Devils got out to that 8-2-2 start with Brodeur playing well and Clarkson playing out of his mind. He has since tailed off, and the Devils are, you know, I don't even know if they're fighting for their playoff lives anymore. Not a lot of games left.
I think there are, you're going to have to, every game you have to win is 4 points, because you're going to have to leapfrog people. It's too hard.
Yeah.
It's just way too hard.
They're not mathematically out of it yet, but mentally, I think they're done. But the Rangers, you know, they just seemed like, and before that Devil game, I want to put this into context, you know, we talked and we thought that was a huge game there, and they lost that game, and they looked listless. I mean, they looked like they were lost. They were in Newark, but they could have been in Kuala Lumpur for all they knew. I mean, they just didn't play well, and it's taken them a long time. And, you know, I heard Michael Kay talk to someone who's high up at MSG, and the high up at MSG, who remained nameless on his show, said that, you know, they didn't come in conditioned, and, they weren't able to do anything. They just had the week of training camp. It was Rick Nash's first year with his new team, getting with his line mates. They've made all these trades. They brought a Powell in. They brought Broussard in from the Blue Jackets.
He's been great.
He's been absolutely great, especially on the power play.
It's like, you know, you look at him and you say, my God, where was that guy in Columbus? He was misused.
Exactly.
You know, he's been the steal of the trades. He's been the biggest
former
steal.
Former sixth round overall pick. I mean, you know, and he's playing like it with the Rangers. He's gutty. He's gritty. I know his bugaboo is that, you know, he gets hurt and he's had shoulder problems, but he has been absolutely great for Tortorella. And, I just think this is just my opinion, and I know they've got to win more. They can't afford to lose any more games this season. They basically got to win out, and they've got the Devils twice, and I know the Devils would like nothing more than to knock the Rangers, if they can, out of the playoffs, because the Jets are right behind them, too, with 44 points. The Rangers are in that 8-hole with 46, and the Islanders are right above them with 47, and I believe the Senators have 48. So it's very tight there from 6-8. So what do you think, as I'm going to shut up now and let my analyst here tell me what you think of, A, the Rangers' chances of getting in here, Chris, and then if they get in and they fall into that 8 seed, will they be a sacrificial lamb for the Penguins?
I don't think they'll be a sacrificial lamb for the Penguins. I think if they wind up in that 8th spot, that series goes 7. I think that becomes...
Wow, really?
That becomes like the Flyers-Penguins series last year. That becomes like,
okay,
you know, a brutal, brutal. It's like, it's almost like you're playing a conference finals to start your playoffs.
Wow.
And it becomes really hard. And, you know, there's going to be guys who are going to not give an inch. They're going to work twice as hard. You know, there's a tremendous amount of pride. I think that the best thing John did, Tortorella, the coaches, he took his foot off the accelerator. I think he realized that, you know, it's a short season. You can't drive these guys. And I think by letting up on them a little bit and letting them play their game and kind of figure things out on their own, I think he's had great success. I think not having Staal back there has put a lot of pressure on Girardi. I think Girardi
right.
and Del Dotto have had to pick up a tremendous amount of ice time because of Staal's injury. But, you know, he's on the, you know, he'll come back, he'll be ready, he'll play his game. But, I've been impressed with Klo. I've been impressed with Broussard.
Klo's been great.
Yeah, I think that change of scenery does somebody well, and I think that's probably what the whole thing was with him. I think Gavrik just wasn't going to fit in, and I just don't think he was going to be part of the bigger plan here. McDonough, has played well for them. Callahan has really picked up his leadership aspects. My concern is in goal. My concern is
really.
I think, you know, Lundqvist once in a while, and just, you know, when there's no action in front of him after a bit, kind of gets caught napping, you know. And I think that that would be my concern is in goal. I think
you would think you know, the goals against is great for him this year. The save percentage is great, but sometimes
He just goes
you scratch your head. You're like, how did that get by him? You know, he plays so well, and he wins a lot of those games by himself, or keeps the Rangers in a lot of those tight games by himself. If it wasn't for him, between those two pipes, the Rangers would have a lot more L's in that loss column. They would. It's just plain and simple. But there are some times where you just can't help but sit there on your couch and say, how the hell did this get by him? How does he stand on his head? And that one gets under his armpit. It makes no sense.
It's a mystery. You know, it's like I've watched Brodeur his whole career, you know, and I've covered Brodeur. And the thing about Marty, every once in a while, he has one of those, like, fluke goals that just finds its way into the back of the net. And you're like, what the heck is going on? And if you revert back to their Carolina series a few years ago when they were, you know, they were up in the series and it looked like they were going to move on in the playoffs, and all of a sudden, bam, bam, they were losing and they were out of the playoffs in a matter of like 5 minutes in the playoffs that year. I don't know. There's something about it. You know, a lot of people say, oh, sports isn't mental. A lot of it is, you know, and if you can convince yourself that you can do anything out there, and you know, you may not have the greatest ability, but if you convince yourself that I can do this, it's a huge advantage. I just think this time that Lundqvist just kind of like, you know, okay, we're up 2-1 or whatever, we're up 3-2 or, you know, it's looking pretty good. The next thing you know, you're down 4-3 or you're down, you know, 3-2. You're like, what the heck's going on? I'm like, how did those two balls get past him? And, like, and I think that's the biggest concern. I mean, you know, they've got the right tools. And I think that they have to just kind of gel. And it's hard. You know, people say, well, it's a 48-game season. You know, well, yeah, it is a 48-game season, but you're a professional athlete. You're supposed to figure out what to do when you're out there. You know
Listen,
that.
Yeah, I just want to thank you once again for hopping aboard and talking a little Jackie and talking a little hockey. I appreciate that. And I want to say this one more time before I let you go and wrap this up. If anyone is out there listening to this on YesNetwork.com as they sit at home eating their TV dinner, watching hockey or whatever it is you're doing, Chris Reilly should have a steady job in the National Hockey League somewhere. He would be a major asset to your company. He's got the contacts. He's got the knowledge, as you just heard here. Hire this guy full time. He deserves it. I could vouch for him. If anything goes wrong, you could tell Yes to fire me. That's how confident I am.
Wow.
In
I
this guy's
that
ability.
Immensely.
This is how confident I am in this guy on the other line to this conversation's ability to handle anything the NHL or any network that covers the NHL could throw at him. Give him a job and get him on board full time. It would be your gain and it would be other networks' loss. That's what I have to say about my good friend Chris Reilly. And it's not because he's one of my good friends. It's because of what he brings to the table. And in the conversations we have, not here on the podcast, this is the first time he's been here, but, you know, just casually at a baseball game where he's getting some freelance work, or casually at a hockey game where he's getting some freelance work. The guy knows his stuff. He knows players. He's impressed the NHL before because he walked through a hallway at the NHL Finals, and everyone at the NHL Finals knew my boy Chris Reilly. And that, boys and girls, is something you need in your organization. So, NHL, please wake up and hire this guy full-time. You will not be sorry.
Thank you very much for that vote of confidence, Chris. I appreciate
and
it.
And I'm off my soapbox. You're welcome. No problem, buddy.
And so that's it. If you want me to come back, let me know. Give me a call. I'm always trying
Absolutely.
To help you.
Absolutely. I'm trying to get Gold's Horseradish to sponsor the podcast. I don't think it should be that difficult. I mean, my brother-in-law is part of the Gold family. So
I think you should get Manhattan Special Sodas that Stan likes to drink to sponsor you, too.
They're fantastic. I love those.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot again.
Hey, the playoffs are starting soon. You will be back on, my friend.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Take care.
All right, take care, brother. That is Chris Reilly, my buddy boy who knows a ton about hockey. And we are going to wrap up the Off the Wall podcast here for this April 15th, for this tax day here on YesNetwork.com. We started on Blog Talk Radio. We're wrapping things up on YesNetwork.com. We went a little overtime. talk a little hockey with my buddy Chris Riley. So you got a bonus 10 minutes today. Lucky you. I know Eric Roldan, who is a big-time listener of the Off the Wall podcast. He works with me here. Yes. As soon as he heard hockey, he probably clicked off. That's okay, Eric. We love you. We always like when you listen to the podcast. And Josh Isaac, super producer, always on the ones and twos on Yankees batting practice today. We come back with BPTV tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, as the Yankees take on the Arizona Diamondbacks at the stadium, wrapping up their 6-game homestand with a 3-game set against the D-backs. That starts tomorrow night. Ivan Nova scheduled to take the hill for the Yankees against Brandon McCarthy. And then Wednesday here on the Off the Wall podcast, as the NBA season comes to a close, we will have our buddy and new Emmy winner, new New York Emmy winner for play-by-play in the New York area, Ian Eagle. You got that right. We got the Emmy winner, Ian Eagle, coming on Wednesday to talk everything NBA, specifically the team he covers for us here on Yes, the Brooklyn Nets, as they get set to take on either the Bulls or the Hawks in the first round in that 4-5 matchup. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening to the Off the Wall podcast today here on the Yes Network, on yesnetwork.com and Blog Talk Radio. We're back with more tomorrow. That's Tuesday. See you then.